Welcome to the Whiskey and Wisdom Podcast, coming to you from the Cargo District Recording Studios in Wilmington, North Carolina, where we discuss the most fascinating topics of life. I'm Tyler Yaw with my co-host, Chris Kelly, and each week we interview a special guest to learn how they acquired their wisdom over a glass of whiskey. So sit back, pour yourself a glass, and enjoy Whiskey and Wisdom.
Welcome back to the Whiskey and Wisdom Podcast, everybody. This is your host, Tyler Yaw. Unfortunately, Chris Kellum was not able to join us today in this beautiful venue of River Landing. However, I was able to bring on
Larry George.
He is the golf pro.
Yeah, well, director of golf and director. Hospitality.
Perfect. I like that title better.
Yeah, I like it a lot better, too.
Sounds good. Look, before we get into that, we did commandeer some whiskey over here. We are going to drink on some Crown Royal. Mm-hmm. Very good. It's always a classic.
Can't
go wrong. Along with our whiskey here, since it's classic, we're taking it neat. So we're going to start back at the very beginning, taking it classic. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I am at the ripe old age of 60 right now. Realize the older I am, the dumber I was earlier in life. But I grew up in the Wilmington area. Went to Breckenridge, Colorado after college, and that's where I found my wife of 32 years. I hope that's the correct math. But we came back after 2 years out there and started working in the golf business at Landfall and knew right off the bat that the golf industry was for me, and it really become my life as far as work and friendships and relationships and families, which the membership at any club you're at, it really becomes your family if you care about them. And so I've been here for 20 years and hope I'm here for the rest of my working career.
That's great. Mm-hmm. So you're one of the very few original Wilmingtonians, it sounds like, then.
Yeah, I was born in Savannah, Georgia, but I came here whenever I was five. So pretty much a Wilmingtonian.
Yeah.
Got two brothers. We all still live in this area, very close family.
Oh, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. So what brought you out to Breckenridge from Wilmington? Because that's complete opposite. You went from the coast to the mountains.
Yes. I love skiing. And what Lauren said to us before, how she missed school, I did not. I needed to get far away from it. So I wanted to just go ski and get really, really good. I was already good, but I wanted to get better.
Okay.
And work for ski school out there at Breckenridge. That's where I found Patty. Knew that I wanted to. I love skiing. Lived out there for 2 years, probably would have stayed out there forever, but decided to come back here and, I will say, start a career. So that's what we did.
So how hard was it to get Patty to come to the coast from the mountains?
You know, it was not hard at all. I think at the time she was in love, and so she was willing to follow me all the way back here. Long way to go. The first year she was here, she lived in the ocean. Because, you know, we have humidity here, and they do not have humidity out there. She's from Montana.
So you said you started over at Landfall, right?
Yeah.
And so when you started in that capacity, were you kind of going all in there and knew that this is what you wanted to do right away, or did it take a little bit of kind of getting your feet?
I knew what I wanted to do before I went back there. I had worked grounds maintenance there before, during college. And then I ended up going to Breckenridge, and whenever we were coming back, we said, you know, one of us needs to work in the golf business. The other one needs to work in the airline business.
That's smart.
We're young. We thought it actually, prayers were answered. I think I applied at like 13 or 14 different golf courses, and none of them were hiring because I was so green and new. Mm-hmm. And I went to a friend of mine that I had worked for that was the director of golf and president at Landfall at the time. And I said, listen, I just want a job. I work for free.
Yeah.
And Drew Pearson was very good to me. I was already probably 26 years old, so it was not hard. I was mature. I had good work ethic, so it was not hard to, I'll say, shine above the other talent that was there.
Yeah.
They were just young. They were still having a good time, and I was past that time.
Very good. That's probably more important to them than the experience on the grounds.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they wanted somebody that was honest and that would work hard.
Yeah. So I couldn't even imagine what it'd be like to work grounds crew on a golf course, because, like, especially out here too, it's just immaculate everywhere.
Yeah.
So the attention to detail must be second to none.
Good leadership is what a good superintendent. It's amazing to me because I play the game. So whenever I play the game, it's a game. I'm not looking at everything. When they play the game, they see everything out there. If anything's out of order, if there's a spot on a green that's the size of a dime, they'll know it.
Oh, wow.
It's just amazing. Good superintendents mean everything.
So when we're recording this now, it's in November. So I know it's not probably as green as it possibly could be in the most prime conditions, but it still looks beautiful out there. How are you able to accomplish that?
Obviously, we have two good superintendents here, Chris Humphrey and Chris Futrell. They have been here longer than I've been here.
Okay.
So they know the place in and out. Without them, I do not believe we would be in the condition that we're at. Without a doubt, the credit goes to them.
That's awesome. Very good. So what brought you from Wilmington out here to River Landing?
You know, not to confuse you, but whenever I was at Landfall for 7 years, and Patty and I wanted to go back out west, went to a place called Colorado Springs, a place called the Broadmoor.
Okay.
It's a five-star, five-diamond resort. Wonderful 700-room, just unbelievable. And ended up working there for 2 years, and my father passed away. And at the time, I still had a sister that had cerebral palsy. So it was very important for me to come back to this area and try to help my mother with my two brothers raise her. You know, she passed away maybe 7 years ago, eight years ago at 47. But she is the reason, probably the greatest gift besides life itself for all of us boys.
That's really neat.
But that's what took us out to the Colorado Springs, to the Broadmoor. And then we came back here because we packed it up, said we're coming back here no matter what. While we're driving across the country, a friend of mine called and asked if I wanted a job at Echo Farms.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, certainly. Didn't have a job. I just knew I was coming back. So I stayed there for 5 years. And then in 2003 is whenever I started here at River Landing, because they started in 96. They opened up, and I had played it actually before I went to the Broadmoor to work. And you could see at that time, 18 holes, how good the Murphy family wanted to make it. And it was great then. It continues to be great with 36 holes. It's just tough to beat.
Yeah. It is a beautiful facility out here. That's for certain. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not sure how much you know about the history of it, but what made the Murphy family want to build this facility out here?
You know, Wendell Murphy tells a great story that he had a business that was doing good. And every time he would hire an executive, the executives would choose to live in Raleigh or Wilmington. And it really came down to their spouse that needed something more than living in the country. So he obviously wanted to build 18 holes because that's what everybody did. They played golf. So he put his brother Pete in charge. And with Pete's vision, River Landing has materialized to what it is today. The plan was never 36 holes.
Oh, wow.
It was never to have a 55,000 square foot clubhouse.
Mm-hmm.
It was to bring something that some of the business people working for the Murphy family farms at the time, something to be proud of and live in Wallace, North Carolina. Obviously, real estate changing, times changing. They sold a lot more property than they ever thought they would sell in Wallace, North Carolina.
Yeah.
And, you know, the membership predominantly has come from the north, but there is still ample southern charm here, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm. So in 96, it started, but in 99, we went to 27 holes. In 2006 is whenever we went to the last nine to 36 holes. And I think the Murphy family is very proud to call River Landing home. And I can tell you, Clyde Johnston, the course designer for both courses, was here less than a month ago. And he is still very pleased with everything here because it's done right.
Oh, yeah. You can definitely tell for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So my other question for you is, I've seen and heard that you're quite a good golfer yourself.
That's a relative term. It depends. If you know, like the memberships, typically older. When you hang around them, you look younger at 60.
Yeah.
The same way with golf. I'm a good athlete. I've pretty much picked up everything easily. It's probably because my schooling wasn't as good as it should have been, like I'm sure enough. Lawrence is. But I love golf, have played for a long time. I started when I was 13. My grandfather took us to the golf course, my brother Jeff and I. He's 2 years older, but we had broken out a lot of the windows in the neighborhood, not understanding the game at all, just knowing we could hit this little ball and it'd go a long way. Love the game. Still like to compete. I compete decently, probably not quite as good as I used to. But again, whenever you understand the golf business, it is a business. I'm a golf professional. I'm not a professional golfer like you see on TV. I've been able to qualify in a couple of PGA Tour events that have been very special. The senior PGA I played in last year. So I still like to compete.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of what keeps the love for golf kind of burning inside you, is the competitive portion of it?
You're playing the course itself when you go play. Now, will you gamble a little bit? Absolutely. Love to rib, love to win a bet and it costs you more in the bar than what you won.
Yep.
That's the fun of it, with fellowship and friendship. That's what the game brings. But if I'm out there by myself, it's still competitive, because you're really trying. Somebody was smart enough to make par, 72, and now you go out there and you try to beat it every time.
Right. Mm. So I assume that you've played all 36 holes here pretty often. Is that true?
Yeah.
Try to.
Yeah, without a doubt. I probably play in the golf business. Most people do not play as much golf as I do. First off, my wife Patty loves to play golf, so we can always play when it's light. Longer in the day, we'll go out and play nine just about every day. Most golf professionals have families. We don't have any kids. And so we're out there a lot more than what most golf professionals are.
That's really neat. So when you're out there playing even just the nine holes, do you find a new way to hit the ball almost every time you go out there? Or do you pretty much have a feel for what you're going to do when you stand up to the tee?
You pretty much got an idea. Playing the course as much as you do, golf is about making the lowest number you can make. It's not necessarily about perfect shots. I'm a perfectionist, so you're always trying to make shots. Did you shoot 67 today? Yeah. Was it a good 67? It could be. It could be a bad 67, which everybody would kill for a 67.
Right.
But you want to calculate your shot, the yardage, the wind, the shape. And then you draw a picture in your mind, and then the goal is, can you duplicate that? Mm. That's what you're trying to do. That's why when we hit some balls on the range, we were talking about setup.
Right.
A little bit more talking about how to make the ball spin one way or the other, the trajectory, by the way you set your shoulders.
Right.
Those are things that I call it an addiction. It's a good addiction, but you want to go out there and create those shots that are in your mind.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Thank you for our sponsor, the Leland Brewing Company, right over the bridge in Leland Township. Definitely check them out. It's a nice local spot with local beers that they're making on site, as well as some that aren't from the area. It is an amazing family-friendly location, and it's really nice. They got some greenery out back, as well as some nice food trucks that pop up every now and then. So give them a check out. Tell them that Whiskey and Wisdom sent you.
For someone, I guess, like myself, because a lot of our listeners tend to be like young professionals, and a lot of the conversations I have is, we know we should be on the golf course because everyone talks about in the business world that that's where deals are made and fellowship is made and the community is made. What is some advice that you would give to someone in their late 20s, early 30s that are interested in the game of golf?
The first thing I would tell you is to not spend your money on new clubs, but to spend your money on instruction. Mm. Whenever we were young, we were not members of a country club. We didn't have money for lessons. And I relate it to trying to graduate high school with no teachers, because that's what happens. I would go to UNCW, where you went to school. Yeah. I'd go out in the open field before any of those fields were ever there.
It was huge.
And I had me a shag bag of balls, and I'd hit them. And I'd go to the other end and I'd hit them back because I couldn't afford $5 for a basket of balls. But instruction is critical to improvement and probably as much satisfaction as anything.
Yeah. I think it makes a lot of sense too, because I've spent a lot of money at Topgolf. And as you could tell when I was out there, I never got any better at hitting it because I never had any instruction.
Right.
So I've hit tons of balls, but until getting the instruction, I definitely hit the best balls that I ever have having the instruction by you. Yeah. So I do appreciate that.
I'm happy to do it. Learning golf is fun. Teaching golf is even more fun.
Oh, yeah.
To watch people get better. Which you saw that in 20 swings that you swung.
Right, yeah. I was pretty impressed. When I first asked, like, hey, do you mind going to the driving range? I thought you were going to look at me and be like, you think you're going to get a better swing in like the couple minutes that we have? But you enthusiastically led me out there and helped me with my swing right away. I mean, it's not perfect by any means, but it got a lot better than it was.
You were eager, and that's what, if somebody's eager to do it, that's half the battle. And you look like a person that would not give up. You'd continue to do it. And yeah, hopefully you'll come back and hit balls and play sometime.
Oh, I certainly will. Yeah, it's definitely on the close midterm radar. My next question, just because Chris isn't here and he likes to ask some off the wall questions.
Okay.
So what is your favorite golf club and why?
People ask me this often. I have played probably 75 of the top 100. There are so many different aspects of the game and course layout conditions that relate into that. So I have never, and even for Chris, I'm not going to choose one, but I will tell you, if something's in the top 10, that's how my friends know if something's really, really good or not. You know, right. We've been to Ireland and play Royal County Down.
Oh, yeah.
Fabulous, maybe number one in the world whenever you look at rankings. Royal Dornoch in Dornoch, Scotland, which is where Donald Ross grew up. And you can see why he became a course designer and the course designer that he is. Fabulous place. Personally, I like golf courses that are traditional, and you look at it, and if it fools you when you look at it, I like it. I do like hard.
Yeah.
Which is not necessarily for everybody. You want fun, but I find fun in challenge. You know, if you look in the country, Pine Valley in New Jersey is absolutely phenomenal. I've yet to play Augusta or Cypress, but I've played Oakmont. I go to Sand Hills in Nebraska, and everybody would say Nebraska in the middle of the Sand Hills, which I think is, if I remember right, 20,000 square miles of sand hills, and they're not hills. They're sand mountains.
Oh, wow.
But there's a course out there called Sand Hills Golf Club, and it is just golf. You spend the night there because it is in the middle of nowhere, and you just play 36 a day. And that's probably a special place that I've played over the last 15 or 16 years. If you go play 5 days in a row, 36 holes a day.
Yeah,
you eat breakfast, lunch, dinner, have a great time with friends, but the course is what makes you keep coming out. So I'm not going to pick one, but I'll tell you that's very close to my heart.
Yeah. Have you ever played Kiawah in South Carolina?
Yeah. I've played all the courses at Kiawah. The Ocean Course is probably the one you're thinking about. Yeah. They've hosted a PGA.
Yep.
Exactly. And a Ryder Cup, which was in '91, that was unbelievable. People don't understand the pressure, and these guys that play professionally, that do it on a day in, day out basis, just do fabulous. And then they turn around and under the gun, you know, they hit a ball in the water that they would never hit in the water. Never. But it's just the pressure of competing for your country is what they're doing.
Yeah.
But yeah, you've been there to Kiawah.
So my full-time job, other than the podcast, I'm a financial advisor.
Okay.
And my senior advisor, one of his buddies played in the PGA game that was there a couple years ago.
Yeah,
and
awesome.
My senior advisor got to be his caddy.
Mm-hmm.
So he really enjoyed going out there and hanging out with all the guys and stuff.
Was he able to make the cut? Do you remember?
No, he said that was not the best game that he's played.
Yeah, I understand that statement well.
Yeah, but yeah, that very similar to what you said too, when the pressure's on and you have the cameras out there and you're just hitting balls that you never would have hit before.
Yeah.
Is exactly the way that he described it out there too. They said that course in particular is more difficult than average courses. Would you say that's true?
Absolutely. And they have made it easier since '91 when the Ryder Cup was there. And they needed to, because people would go there and they wouldn't want to come back. Why? Why do you want to beat yourself up like that? But it is a I don't even know what they charge anymore, but it is a wonderful, wonderful golf course to have right here in South Carolina.
Yeah. And what makes that golf course so much more difficult than the average golf course that's out there?
For there, it's about landing area. Okay. There's not as much landing area there. And, you know, it's penal. Whenever you hit a ball off the fairway, where is it going to be? Is it going to be in water? That's costly. Is it going to be in sand? That's costly. Again, they have softened it up so much since 91, and I played it before then. The wind blows, and when the wind blows, which Scotland and Ireland, that's what happens. That's why I love it over there so much. Yeah. That's what makes it hard to control. You have to see different shots, and I'm used to playing here in the States.
Right. I didn't even think about that being in other countries and how the wind would affect playing the course.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, Texas, if you go out there, everybody can hit a low ball because the wind blows a lot. And you learn to do that. The higher your ball is, the more the wind's going to affect it, the more it'll take it offline.
That's interesting. I never would have thought about that, but it makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's probably not much wind in Topgolf. But I bet there's a little bit, but not much. Not when you're hitting shots.
Yeah, not that far out. Yeah, it's not too bad. So I played out in Las Vegas before, and that was interesting out there versus
desert
South
golf.
Carolina.
Yeah.
You can like tap that thing and it flies.
lower, I guess, density, the ball flies a lot further. Whenever I was in Breckenridge, I played out there, and the course is at 9,600 feet. And, you know, a shot that you would hit 280 is probably going to go 320.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it's amazing the difference, just how light the air is.
One of our favorite questions to ask is, what would you describe as success? So whether that's in the game of golf, professionally, or personally, or all three.
I guess the first thing I'd say is success is enjoying the game. It is a game. It's supposed to be played as a game. And if you're not enjoying it, I would be the first to tell anybody to stop playing it.
Right.
It can show your character. And it's easy to get upset. If getting upset made you better, I'd say get upset, but it usually makes you worse. I've not seen many instances on that. But success is enjoying the game, because that's what it is. It's just a game. From a business standpoint, it is a business for me, and it's really about making the membership happy, their guest happy, and creating an experience, which I've never had a bad day here, never had a bad review or somebody come in and say the golf course is bad or this was wrong. And at Echo Farms, where I was for 5 years, it was a big difference. It was something that you're trying to make people happy, and you didn't have the same facility that we have here. So job's pretty easy making people happy. The game, if they're unhappy, it's probably because they didn't hit the ball as good as they wanted, not because the course was in bad shape.
Fair enough. So with what you do around here, with the business part being said, what does your day-to-day look like?
A lot of running around.
Yeah.
And when I say that, you know, with the director of hospitality title, we have a hotel here, 70 rooms. We also have some cottages and suites, but we have a Mad Bull restaurant.
Right.
We own the convenience store across the street.
Okay.
On top of the 36 holes in this clubhouse, the biggest part of my job is two things. It's managing managers. Yeah. Making sure they have the tools that they need to do the job that we want them to do. The other is really dealing with the membership and the customer base, making sure they've got great experiences. And if they haven't, which nobody's perfect, hopefully we can try to find a way to make them happy.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't realize that you were in charge of the hotel and the Mad Boar and everything out front.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's something that happened after Florence. 5 years ago, I guess, five and a half, the GM had left at that time, our director of hospitality. Yeah. So they asked me to step in. It's a unique role here at River Landing that is a little different than most clubs. But working for the Murphy family, I would say this. They do some things different. But they like a quality venue, if that's a hotel or if that's the convenience store or the Mad Boar or this clubhouse. They do everything right. And they're willing to challenge themselves to do it the best way possible. They're not just going to listen to necessary trend that the industry may tell them to do.
Talk about making it more challenging. Can you tell us a story about how Mad Boar was made?
You know, Pete Murphy, which is Wendell's brother, that wanted to bring something to this area. He actually went overseas, and I can't remember. I'm pretty certain the bar came from Ireland. Have you been in there?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome. Awesome place. But he had the vision to make it what it is. And, you know, we originally started with the Right Side being a fine dining, mm-hmm. and we were doing that because of the membership and what they were looking for. And the Mad Boy restaurant, the other side, was really there for the day-to-day meat and potato kind of people that I am. And somewhere down the road, you realize that people weren't looking for fine dining. They were looking for casual fare. They wanted to have a good time. They wanted to sit in a pub and drink a beer or whiskey,
right,
and talk and have a good time. And so it sort of has metamorphosed into that situation.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I remember correct, it would have been in 99 whenever they built the Mad Boar.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it still looks fabulous. It's a great restaurant.
Yeah. I really appreciate the electric chargers that are out front too. Mm-hmm. So I drive a Tesla. So anytime I'm coming back up to Raleigh or to visit my wife's family, this is clearly the spot that we stop at mm-hmm. too. So we go, we charge and come on into Mad Boar.
Mad Boar, that's perfect. Yeah, that's sort of what we were hoping and envisioning when we did them.
Yeah, it was very smart because we've driven by for years prior to me having my car. And we'd always say, hey, we need to go stop there sometime. That place looks really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And we're always trying to get one place to another pretty quick. So we never stopped. And now I'm like, wouldn't hurt to stop and charge right now. So now it's an excuse to go to Mad Boar.
That's probably a good thing for Tesla drivers, that you probably take life a little bit slower and enjoy things. And that's, I'm sort of like you used to be. I'm always in a rush to go to the next thing, and enjoying life, you got to slow down a little bit, which I have at 60,
right,
but just a little bit.
That's something I learned in my travels. So I used to live in Pennsylvania. So my family was
in Lancaster.
Pennsylvania. And so I'd go up and visit my family when I was in college, and I would see how short of a stop I could make at each rest stop and try to get up as quick as possible. So where I've come now with having this vehicle, I know I have to stop every 4 hours or so to charge at the longest. So just kind of taking the time to enjoy the journey more so than the destination at that point. So,
Truth. Yeah.
And having the Mad Boar here definitely helps that experience, because there's plenty of other places that you can stop to charge that aren't near as nice or fun.
Yeah. If they don't do the Mad Boar, a lot of times you'll see them walking over to the convenience store to get whatever they want while they're sitting there. So it works out.
Yeah, that was the other thing that's nice too. It's like if you just want to grab a quick water or something, you just walk right across the street. So it's in the perfect spot there for that. So one of my last questions for you is, if you could tell your younger self one thing, what would it be?
Wow, that's a good question. I certainly would not have done a lot of things that I've done as a Christian. I would certainly sit there and have done better. But I guess probably it'd be my faith to put more time and effort into glorifying God's name and spreading his word, really. That's what I would think. I would have loved to have found golf earlier, too, though.
Yeah. No, I love that one, too. That's something that I've kind of been focusing this past year on as well, is kind of looking back and where could I have spread the word more or better than I had in the past. So that's definitely in the forefront of my mind, too. So I greatly appreciate you sharing that with us today. So now more on the River Landing side, what's the best way for people to find you or learn more about River Landing?
Riverlanding.com would be the first thing. But what I would tell anybody, you know, we have a lot of residents here. I love to challenge people whenever they come in here to go look at other communities. They're all beautiful. I'm not saying that. But I think what we have to offer here is special, different, unique. You know, we had originally planned to go back to Wilmington whenever I didn't work anymore, but I doubt that ever happens. I think we're going to stay here the whole time.
I don't blame you. It's beautiful out here. One of the other things I wanted to bring up, too, is a lot of my friends have gotten married out in this area, too. Your wedding venues are incredible. So I think that's amazing. I wanted to shout that out for you all.
Thank you very much.
And
we do a few. more than a few.
I was going to say, I'm sure it's more than a few. Just the small friend group that I had when I first moved up here, there was quite a few. And what I was telling you all before as well, about 10 years ago when I first moved down here, before I got into podcasting and everything, I was a DJ. And I had the opportunity to come out here quite a few times and DJ some weddings too. And was always super excited. The food out here was always amazing that you guys catered and everything. So,
you know, you've got anywhere from rustic in River Lodge to host a wedding to upstairs in the ballroom or at the Celtic Court.
Right.
We've done a few weddings out on property, so there's so many options for anybody. I will tell you a funny story. One of my assistants was the first person that I realized got married the second time here. He got married his first time here and probably 4 years later got married the second time. That wasn't a good fit.
That is pretty funny, though. It's good that it's very telling that he's willing to come back twice, though.
Very true. I think we gave him a decent discount. But there's so many places to have a wedding here that, again, unique. And I can tell you this from a pricing standpoint, if you want to compare us to what other people are offering, that's probably why we have so many weddings here. We're pretty successful.
That's awesome. That's very good to know. We'll make sure
Are you married?
I am married.
Okay.
Yeah.
Second time?
Just one time so far. Yeah, one wife and kids. So,
how many kids?
Two kids. I have a 3-year-old and a 1.5-year-old.
Oh boy!
Yeah, so they've been running me around.
Mm.
Yep, both just got over sickness. That's why, for anyone listening, I sound more like a duck than I typically do on here. So. But I wanted to thank you so much for coming on the podcast today and allowing us to come out and taking a look at this beautiful facility that you have and giving us a small tour and helping me actually drive the ball straight and not miss it near as often. So I greatly appreciate that. Thank you.
You're very welcome, Tyler. Enjoy the day, bud.
Thank you. Cheers.
Cheers to you.